Hello friends, Chris here, your friendly neighborhood dungeon master. Welcome to this episode of the Heroes of Hovel's Way. If you would like more of this content, or a larger chunk, you can get that. All of Part 2 is now available on our Patreon. You can pick those up by going to patreon.com/thakawa. That's THACOWA. Thank you for listening, and now let's get on with the show.
In the barony of Castakin, evil is rising. Creatures born of mud, stone, and bone have appeared. Politics keep the powers that be from taking action against this threat. The barony needs heroes. In the far-off hamlet of Hovel's Way, two childhood friends, bound by dreaming stars, may be the heroes that the barony needs. This is their story. The story of the Heroes of Hovel's Way. Odine Dahlia Celestine is played by Angela Murray.
She knows that there is something amiss here, but she is not socially adept to have any clue of how to help.
Aramon Durant is played by Jared Rasher.
I know, I've mentioned my dreams before. I had one that didn't just feel meaningful, it felt important.
And the Dungeon Master is Chris Nizak.
Why are we teaching when we're fighting something terrible?
You will not invade my small clothes!
Get it off!
Now, we begin.
You get blasted backwards through the wall. Odie, you see Aramon go flying by you. There's splintered wood that flies everywhere as the slurg explodes out the window across the street, hits a building from what you can see. But Aramon is in a table that's broken and you are dazed on the ground, wood around you. Your back hurts, your head hurts, there's blood coming off of your scalp where you've bashed your head. Safari is standing there, looking at the hole that you just went through. Monty looks at you, Odie. What the hell was that?
I have no idea.
Odie, what do you do?
Odie stands there a moment torn, looking out the hole out of the building to where the slurg went, and then back into the other room where Aramon is, and she tells Safaria, see if you can see where the slurg went, and then she goes to tend to Aramon.
Safaria nods and goes to the window where the slurg went flying out. It's a bit broken on the edges, too. She pokes her head out, looks around. You see her climb out the window. We'll get to that in a second. You go check on Aramon. Aramon, when your blade, with the radiant energy that you have coursing through you from the dreamer, hit the slurg, there was some sort of reaction that you have not seen from a slurg yet. There was like a dark aura around the slurg. And when I say dark, I don't mean evil, like the power of shadow and darkness. You've seen power like that before. It came off of Oliver, the shadow man that you fought. It feels like forever ago, but it really wasn't all that long ago.
It's like 3 days ago.
Something like that, yeah. What are you feeling? What are you thinking right now as everything is kind of watery and wavy around your eyes?
So for a minute, he starts to kind of drift off, almost like, I could just go to sleep here. I am not comfortable, but I can't feel much, so it's the same as being comfortable. And then I kind of start to like come out of it and think about, you know, seeing like this like absolute black against the neon purple and blue that flared out of there, and that contrast between the two, and trying to figure out like what that even means. And I am still very disoriented, but I am going to try and stand up and probably slump against the wall as soon as I do, because Aramon definitely stands up too fast.
Oh, stop. Sit. Don't get up. Don't get up. Oh, my goodness. You got blood in your face.
Sit. It's just like that time I fell out of the loft in the barn.
No, it is not. So sit. Hold on a minute. And Odie is completely out of magic at this point. She gave her last good berry to the gentleman earlier, and she's basically tries to do the best she can with just bandages and medicine.
Aramon, as you're being tended to by Odie, as I said, everything's a little bit soft. And as you sit there and Odie is wrapping a bandage around your head, things slow down for you. This waving pastel colors float all about you. The world almost looks as if it's moving in slow motion, as if a watercolor has overcome your vision. Very much the same way that your better dreams function. as you're moving through time, because you can remember chunks of your dreams at this point, especially lately as you've been sleeping the last 6 months. This watercolorish, neon, floating space that you find yourself in. In the corner of your eye, there is some figure, a humanoid figure. It's there, but it's indistinguishable. A blob, but it's a person, you think? An entity? Something. It's got a flower in its hand. It's leaning over it, smelling it. You don't see Odie anymore. You're just sitting there. Even when you look down at yourself, you are also in watercolor. What do you do?
First, you know, Aramon will, like, play with the time dilation a little bit by just kind of moving his hand in front of him and fascinating himself as he's watching, like, the colors ripple off of it. And then he shakes himself out of it and walks over to the figure and says, "Excuse me, I am not used to having, well, sometimes I have other people in my dreams, but it's usually someone that I already know, or maybe sometimes it's somebody that I know that I don't know, but you're kind of in between the two of those. So may I ask who you are?"
Aramon, you say all of that, and you know that you said all of that, but it all sounds like you're speaking underwater. Blah, 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 blah. You know everything you just said. Odie, you see Aramon, who is obviously concussed. He's waving his hand around, and he's like, blah, 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 blah.
No, stay here, gentle tap on the cheek. Come on, stay here. Monty, get me some water.
The figure turns to you and hands you the flower. You feel warmth, compassion, kindness, and potential from the figure and the flower.
I try to very, very carefully and slowly say thank you, hoping that that actually comes out the right way. Thank you.
Do you take the flower?
I do.
Odie, you hear Aramon slowly say thank you, and then his hand starts glowing. Aramon, what colors does your hand glow?
I think it is still a variation of that neon blue and purple that has been kind of showing up when he smites things.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome, buddy. You're glowing. I don't know what this is.
Back in the dream space, you hear or feel a voice. Aramon Durant, I was hoping we would get a chance to speak, just not like this. It may be a little soon for us to speak in this manner, but I was hoping that you would become mine.
Well, I mean, I'm not really spoken for, but I do have... Oh, never mind. Stop. Wait. And it is probably at this point, because Aramon's mouth always gets a few feet ahead of him before his brain catches up, that he is starting to realize that this is that feeling of the emanation of everything that has been pushing him towards feeling like he has a destiny and kind of moving him towards thinking that he has a purpose in life. And that finally catches up with him after he has started to say things that aren't necessarily the brightest. And he almost wishes he could grab those words and pull them back in.
Your personage in this space turns beet red with embarrassment as you have those thoughts. Not just like your cheeks, your whole physical, ethereal being. It is okay. I would hope that you would be my knight just as your father was.
Wasn't my father a knight of the kingdom? Not anything, you know, higher power or anything like that. I was not under the impression that he followed anything deeper than tradition and what is proper and right to do.
Broken dreams can shatter souls, and you get a hint of sadness from the figure.
I was not aware that my father was anything like me.
You have it backwards. It's that you are like your father.
Aramon, for a brief moment, for feeling very at peace and calm and warm here, for a second feels a little cold, because that is not something that he wants to picture himself as.
So I ask you again, will you be my knight?
Ever since I have started dreaming, I have been thinking that I must be moving towards a purpose. There is nothing else I can say other than that I will be your knight. I feel like in my dreams I am seeing a better world, and I feel like because I have seen these things, I must work to make that a better world, to make people safe enough for their own dreams to be realized. These are the things that I most ardently wish to come true.
The flower that I have given you, place it over your heart.
And he will do so.
Odie, as you have finished bandaging his head, you see this glowing power in his hands, this blue and violet ephemeral energy. He takes his hand and he places it over his heart, and when he does, that energy cascades across his entire body, and he fades out of existence in front of you.
Oh, no, 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 come back here, come back. And she's trying to grab him to keep him from fading away.
Your hands go through him.
Oh, Robin's gonna kill me.
Ahriman, the world that you're in becomes more solid, and you see a woman standing in front of you. You no longer have a flower. You were just there. While it's more solid, it looks very much like a painting all around you of a field. There's a river in the background. There's a little village. You realize it's Hovel's Way, an idyllic version of Hovel's Way, as if somebody painted it. The woman smiles at you. Welcome, Dreamwalker, into my service. It has been a very long time since I've spoken to anyone like this.
I am truly honored.
This place, the Walking Dream, you may come here from time to time now. It could help you. And I have to warn you, what you just encountered is not the power of the Mountain Destroyer. It's the power of the Golem of Chaos, Odvec.
All right, so we are dealing with multiple cosmic entities that are potentially encroaching upon the world. I want to say that this should make me more concerned, but it also makes me much happier that I have sworn to keep anything from encroaching on this world and harming the people that I love.
My knight, the Titans are not cosmic entities. They're of your world and their world at the same time. They're no different than you or what I was. She's a little sad at that. You can no longer stay here. If you stay here much longer, you may be stuck here forever. So now go. And she touches you, and you shimmer back into where Odie was taking care of you.
Odie's sitting in the middle of the floor of this shattered hallway at the top of the stairs outside of this room, head in hands, rocking back and forth. I lost him. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know where he is. I don't know where he is. And Monty is sitting there with a glass of water.
Ahriman, when you come back to this place in space, your wounds are healed. You have all your hit points back. You are not bleeding from the head anymore. Although the rag bandage, whatever Odie used to wrap around your head with the poultice and such, is still on your head. But you feel much better.
So I will kind of like unwrap that and kind of like, you know, run his fingers through his hair and shake my hair, and it kind of flows out again. He'll stop for a minute and goes, "Thank you. I don't think I need this anymore."
And like Odie just like springs up and like hands around his torso to hug him. You were bleeding and you were in delirious, and then you disappeared, and I thought I lost you, and I knew Robin would kill me, and I didn't know what was going on, and oh, thank God you're back.
Even Monty's grabbing your ankle wrapped around your calf.
Ahriman's going to lean into the hug and kind of like lean his head down next to Odie's ear and say, "We have so much ahead of us, and we all need to be with one another and remember what we're doing this for."
Can we do it in the morning? I'm so tired. Oh, Silpharia.
Silpharia comes walking back up the stairs. "I found this in the remains of the creature." She hands you it's about a fist-sized crystal humming with the remains of some power.
Do you know what this was, Silpharia?
"This is infused ore. The power is that of the plane of Earth."
"Do we need to worry about that anymore?" And Odie points at the rock crystal.
"I am not sure. What I just told you was a fragment of a memory that I managed to pull out of my past."
"Okay."
At this point, Ahriman goes, "This may be the right time to bring this up, but I have this on good authority now that we are not just dealing with the Mountain Destroyer, but we may also be dealing with the Chaos Golem."
The owner of the Golden Oyster walked up earlier, saw the terribleness, left, came back with the town guards. Leo Polk is there. "Everything okay here? What happened?"
I think we're okay now. There was one of those slurgs pretending to be one of those slurgs, a special one who was here, and we came to confront him, and there was a fight, and when there was an explosion of magic. It's dead now. It's gone. It's who killed Mara.
Oh boy. That seems bad. And then one of the other guards says, this guy doesn't look so good either. Because Tazbar Meladin is still turned to stone in there.
Yeah. Aramon, do you have any more? And she waves her hands.
And Aramon goes, before the fight started, I wasn't quite sure that I had anything left, but I'm feeling much better now. And he's going to look into his palm and just kind of like see if he can make anything show up.
And there in your palm is glowing blue and purple energy. Wispy, ephemeral energy.
So I'm going to look at this, get a smile on my face, and like put it in Odie's face. Say, look, I have some.
And Odie's going to just grab his hand and lead it over to touch Tazbar.
As you get close, you see that his eyes, they're still eyes. They're like looking at you like with rapt panic.
No. This is going to be good. This is going to be okay. This is going to, and it's going to get you out of there.
As Aramon touches Tazbar, from where he touches and the energy spreads out over him, this poor scholar, the stone skin recedes, almost flaking off, turning back into flesh. And then he collapses to the ground. He was still breathing as it was anyway, but his entire epidermis, all of his skin, had turned to stone.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I just thank you so much.
And he sits on the ground, grabbing his legs, curling into the fetal position. We cut to you in the common room. There is a lovely meal of oysters and bread and some amount of pasta on the table. There's some mugs of ale. Tazbar is sitting in one of the seats. Monty is standing on the table at one end, gnawing on some oysters, the shells, sharpening his teeth on them, sharpening his claws on them. It's kind of disturbing, actually.
Gotta keep them sharp, right?
Looking at you, Odie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, gotta keep them sharp.
Everyone's looking at the raccoon from time to time because it's weird. There's just a raccoon in on a table sharpening his claws and his teeth on oyster shells as he eats them.
Once Aramon notices that anyone is looking at him, I go, it's all right. He fences too.
Leo Polk shakes his head. That makes sense. The raccoon fences. You any good there? Monty, he looks at Leo like, this guy doesn't know anything, does he?
Oh, Monty, be nice.
Monty goes over to your cloak, Odie, roots around and grabs a couple of sticks out of it. He hands one to Leo. And then he starts sparring with Leo. I guess the raccoon can spar. Never mind. Good fight.
Better with my claws, though. All Leo hears is...
If you spar with him long enough, you'll realize he overexposes his left every so often, probably about every third strike.
Monty stops and looks at Odie.
Why did he never tell me that before?
Because he doesn't know. I mean, he knows you can talk, but I don't know that he knows if he talks to you, he can let you know. Aramont, you should tell Monty these things.
There's like a whole crowd of people like standing around watching you all talk to this raccoon now too. Like it's been going on for a while, but now the crowd is just getting bigger and bigger. Tazbar, sitting at the end, even he is smirking at the situation at this point. He looks a little less pale than he did an hour ago when he was, you know, stone. Thank you for saving me.
It is the least we could do. We seem to have made a bit of a career of tracking down these slurgs.
Do you know what it wanted from you?
Yes, I do. It wanted me to decipher that. Points at your star chart.
Can you decipher it?
I did. I stalled as long as I could, but I told it what it wanted to know.
Can you tell me?
Oh, yes. Yes, I can. It is pointing to a location to the west and north of here. If anybody has a map, I can tell you where. I mean, I did it based on positioning of the sky and then, you know, travel time.
Do we actually have a map?
Yeah. I don't see why you wouldn't. You're traveling with the Baroness.
Okay, so Odie will dig into her bag and pull out the map, which she has probably made little notations on, like, you know, where the island was that's no longer there, where we fought the bandits in the farmhouse, you know, little things like that, and then put it in front of Tazbar.
Tazbar takes a look at it. He pulls out one of those pencils that uses the plant as a lead, as we discussed many, many, many sessions ago. He goes over it. He then scrawls an X on a spot. Leo Polk takes a look over. He's like, oh, I know that spot. There's a mine there. That hasn't been there for very long, maybe about 7 months.
So relatively new mine?
Yeah, it's about 8 hours, 9 hours away by horse.
Okay.
Yeah, Drog Tanny's the foreman out there. It's his operation.
Have you heard from them recently?
I mean, no, but that's not unusual. I mean, big town, right? They send ore back now and again. Small mine, but good for iron, apparently.
Okay, we're probably going to have to go check it out.
Oh, before I forget, I am very sorry, but are you good at restoring legible things, it seems like, from the star chart? Because I have something that is, it was legible, and now it's not legible anymore, and I would like it to be legible again, but I'm not quite sure how that process goes. And I will pull out Remy's journal.
This guy, he looks pretty bedraggled, right? Like, he's got white hair that's kind of a mess. His eyes are purple, and they're looking up at you finally. He's been looking away from everybody this entire time, like he's thinking about everything that's happened to him. When you say that, though, his eyes get sharper, and he gives you a look over. Yeah, I can probably fix that. I have a spell, a Titan shard with a spell in it that can fix this. May I have it?
Oh, certainly. And I'll slide it over to him.
And it'll take me a half an hour, maybe. If you want to come up and see, I can show you.
Don't worry. It is nothing that must be done immediately. It's just something that I would like to have done, and I appreciate it. I know you've been through a lot.
It'll take my mind off of everything that's happened to me. I very much enjoy the process of casting spells. It helps me clear myself.
It's funny because you say that as if you do that on purpose, but every time I do something that I don't know whether it's a spell or not, it just kind of happens when it needs to happen.
His eyes narrow as you say that. That is very strange. You don't understand how you use your magical powers? Are you not a Titan Charm wielder?
Oh, definitely not. I mean, I understand in that it is very connected to the destiny that the Dreaming Veil has put forth in front of me. But beyond that...
So you're a cleric of the Dreaming Veil?
You're not a cleric.
No. I have had no formal religious training, and I don't think I would look good in the robes.
He hits things too hard with his sword to be a cleric.
Ah, so then maybe you're one of the Dreaming Veil's knights? They called them paladins in ancient times.
That would be the term that she used when she spoke to me.
Who spoke to you?
The Dreaming Veil.
When did the Dreaming Veil speak to you?
Upstairs, when I went through the table.
Arima, we really got to talk about you giving information when you're supposed to give information. I didn't know that. You didn't tell me. You just disappeared, and then you appeared.
Everyone seemed to be hungry, and everyone needed to relax, so I didn't want to ruin the moment. I figured we would get downstairs, everyone would get a full belly, then we would all be comfortable, then I would bring it up.
This gentleman, his jaw has dropped at this point, wide open. You spoke with the Dreaming Veil?
Yes, very much so.
But they don't speak except for the monarch. They're just powerful concepts and ideas that grant power to people who worship them.
Well, she was a concept that spoke to me and handed me a flower and then asked me to say some words to invoke my loyalty to the ideal she instilled in me.
The group of people, which is now fairly substantial, are standing around this table watching because Monty was first, you know, being Monty. And now they're listening to this conversation about goddesses appearing to people and talking. They all start whispering to each other.
In front of all of these people, because these people are standing around the table, Odie is sitting there rolling her eyes.
Just that's it? Just rolling her eyes?
Yeah, because like, yes, okay. Ugh, why didn't you tell me this?
To be fair, I was not thinking that succinctly because the last thing that had gone through my mind was the table.
Yeah, I was pulling splinters out of your forehead.
Can you tell me everything that happened? Asks Tazbar.
I can tell you the impression of it. It is like many times when you dream about things. I know the gist of what happened, but the details start getting a little fuzzy the further out it gets.
Please come up to my room while I fix your book here, and please tell me everything, if you would be so kind.
I'm going to go to bed.
Odie, before you go to bed, can I ask you one thing?
Uh-huh.
Would you be able to send one of those messengers out just to check on Robin and everyone else?
In the morning.
All right.
And Odie looks as bedraggled as she looks as exhausted as she sounds. Odie is utterly tapped out. She has half her hit points. She has no first or second level spells left. She has one lucky point left and no luck points. She's tapped out.
Do you go with Tazbar and tell him everything that he asks you?
Oh, yes, I will follow him up, and to the best of my ability, I will answer anything that he is asking me about.
Nice. And he fixes your journal for you. Now, you do discover that he is a scholar of the gods and the titans, and he is a titan shard user. You actually see him pull out a, it looks like a leather roll-up case. When he unrolls it, there are a number of glowing crystals inside of it, and he pulls one out and uses it, waves it over your journal, chanting for a good 20 minutes. And when he's done, all of the words that were washed away inside of it have fixed themselves and now can be read again.
I am very, very happy that you have done this. I am very much in your debt.
It is my pleasure. You saved my life. This is the least I can do.
Okay. I will. That makes sense. However, if I could impose a little bit more, would the Chaos Golem work with the Mountain Destroyer? Is this something where they would be in allegiance with one another, or is these conflicting things that we might get caught in the middle of?
Oh, no, the Titans were all on the same side during the Titan War. They fought against the Zithian Empire. Do you not know much about the Titans?
Well, no.
Oh, from what I've been able to glean from what happened, it wasn't millennia ago, it was only 600 years. People conflagrate these things so much. But it's not like ancient history, just a long time ago. I mean, 600 years is a long time. The Zithians were a very highly advanced magical society. They had powers and abilities that I would say that we have not seen in the past 600 years, but for some reason, they've been creeping back up recently, some of these powers and abilities from that time period. I don't know why. I think it has something to do with the wards on the Titans' prisons that exist out there. But the Titans, they were huge constructs that were not intended to be sentient by everything that I've been able to discover. They were supposed to be power generators for the Zithian Empire. The Zithian Empire covered this entire planet from what I can tell, at least most of it from what I've been able to find out, just in this smaller part. I've traveled beyond the Kingdom of Rook to find these things out, but the Titans, they were all brothers and sisters, essentially. The Zithians created these batteries. They were supposed to be, like, construct batteries, and then they gained sentience. So they aren't from the elemental spheres as other elementals are. They are birthed from this world, but also from that world. They were working in conjunction with the Zithian Empire, from what I've been able to discover, for a very long time, until they didn't want to be subservient or felt that they should have their own space, and they didn't like the way that the Zithians were treating them. There's some conflict about how that goes. The Zithians may have been preparing for war for a long time, having inadvertently created sentient walking engines of elemental power. I mean, that is dangerous in and of itself. But a war broke out, and it was the Titans versus the Zithian Empire. And that war ended with the Zithians managing to imprison the Titans that were remaining that weren't destroyed. The Water Titan was destroyed, and the Titan of Wild Energy, and by wild I mean nature, was, its consciousness was destroyed. So it's just a raging beast of primordial energy, nature energy. But they managed to trap that too. But in doing so, they cut off magic from the world in some way. It was the only way that they could do it in order to weaken the Titans enough to imprison them. That's why the world is the way it is, by all our best guesses as scholars.
Hmm.
So to answer your question, the short version is yes. If the Golem of Darkness, the Chaos Golem, would absolutely be working with Valhalla Morris, the Mountain Strangler, the Titan of Earth.
I appreciate the clarity. I am not comforted by this.
I mean, it shouldn't be a problem. They're all still imprisoned.
I am not so sure about that. I think our uptick in Slurg activity is directly related to the attention of the Titans returning to us.
Well, that has been my theory too, but it shouldn't be so soon based on what I've been able to learn. There should be time, like years, decades even, before these wards can fail completely. I know that there are people out there that are looking for them to reinforce them. I'm also aware that the Druids of the Circle of Stars were supposed to be some of the keepers of these wards, but maybe their schism has caused some problems with that.
I wish Odie was here, but she definitely needs her rest. Some of this that you have spoken of sounds familiar, but on a smaller scale. We were in a place that had wards that was containing elemental power, and the wards were breaking down, and we had to do what we could to keep them from exploding as much as possible.
Really? He perks up at that. Where was this? I would love to see this place.
It used to be out in the middle of the lake, and now it is gone because it went back down again.
Ah.
So you would probably need to hold your breath quite a bit.
Understood. That's unfortunate.
You talked about the Zithians creating these big, big things. What about something smaller, like more person-sized? You know anything about something like that that they may have created?
I know that before they built the larger Titans as capacitors, they experimented with smaller ones to step them up in size. I'm also aware that there was some binding of elementals to magical machines and constructs for power purposes. That's a lot of the Titan shards are the remains of elementals. A lot of the other Titan shards are also just pieces, remnants from the Titans themselves. And then some are just Zithian artifacts. We use them as a catch-all, but it's much more complicated than that. We call them Titan shards. Just here, and he pulls out his leather roll and he unrolls. He's like, this is a Zithian device. This is a remnants of an elemental that doesn't exist anymore. And I'm pretty sure this piece right here, and it's glowing with a shadowy darkness, was a piece of the golem of chaos himself. It's one of my more powerful spells.
I am reflexively going to reach out towards that one with like my finger and just see if it reacts as I get my finger closer to it.
It does not.
All right. That is probably a good thing. Aramon is going to do what he is about to do, not because he is trying to be duplicitous, but because he doesn't want to reveal a friend's circumstances, whether he does this well or not. Let us assume that someone found one of these smaller versions of these constructs, and it couldn't remember everything. Is there something that you would do to help them remember things that it used to know?
I'm not sure what you mean.
Pretend that you are in bed and you need to go to sleep and you're a young child, and one of your parents, probably not your father because he doesn't like reading to you, gets out a book and he starts reading a story to you. The story is about a construct that people found in this old, and Aramon will totally just explain the same place he just explained to him about where Odie and I were with all of these elemental wards. And then they find a new friend who can't remember everything.
Tazbar nods his head. Hypothetically, if there was a construct with a personality of an elemental from a crystal that was mostly intact, that is the remnant of one of these elementals, and still had its soul, for a better lack of a better term, inside of it, but couldn't access its memories, I'm sorry, I wouldn't know how that would work unless I studied it very closely for a period of time.
Which makes perfect sense, because it's not something that is actually happening right in front of you.
Exactly what you said.
Aramon thinks he has been very sly in protecting his friend's secrets.
And told everything to Tazbar Meladin. Because there's no way to get any of that information across from Aramon's point of view without actually telling it all, but still not realizing that he told it all.
And this is why we love Aramon.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Heroes of Hobble's Way. Music and sound effects were from Storyblocks and Envato. If you'd like to interact with us, you can join our Discord. There's a link to join it in our show notes. We talk about D&D and other fantasy gaming stuff there along with other topics. If you want some more, you can be a patron. Being a patron, you can get the first 7 episodes of Part 2 as one large chunk right now. Join for free for 7 days and stick around for $5 a month. I'll be releasing our episodes early there in larger pieces going forward. We also have PDF content of GM tools like Jared's layer action piece and things you can use in your games like stat blocks for the Slurg and magic swords from Jared. I also talk about the game there, The Heroes of Hovel's Way, in a GM podcast called Chris's Hovel. Check it out at patreon.com/thakawa. That's patreon.com/THAC0WA. The Patreon helps us make this show and Thaka with advantage. Speaking of patrons who help us out, I would like to thank David Ridout, Matea the Sorceress, the Polish Ogre, Peter Martin, Eric Bontz, Doug Rass, and Victor Wyatt. Last thing, we're part of the Polygamerist Podcast Network. Great show on there is called Pandas Talking Games. It's where Phil and Senda take questions from the listeners and answer them, like Card Talk, but for your game. Thank you once again for listening, and beware Valhalla Morris and his slurg. They just love getting in your small clothes.